Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. Such a fun, interesting guest I have on today's episode. David Crockett. I feel like I need some extra excitement in my voice just to say that. Of course, David is part of one of the most important families in wrestling history, with his father being the late Jim Crockett, his brother, the late Jim Crockett Jr., people behind Wrestling on the Superstation, so influential. And David was on the mic for so many great moments on World Championship Wrestling and on Mid-Atlantic Wrestling. David will be teaming back up with Tony Schiavone to broadcast Ric Flair's last match on July 31st at 6.05 p.m. on Fight. So here we go with the great David Crockett on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. So excited to be joined by one of the voices of wrestling on the Superstation, a big part of one of the key families in wrestling history, Mr. David Crockett. David, so glad you're with us today here on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Really is.
So you hear that Ric Flair is going to be wrestling one more match. What emotions come to you as somebody so personally tied to him?
Well, at first I was extremely concerned. And then listening to Ric, watching him train, I said, he's going to do it. Now, he's not going to be like the Ric Flair that I knew him at first as far as athleticism. But he's going to be great. He's going to give you a great match. And the whole night is going to be fantastic.
When you look back at Ric Flair's career, how do you evaluate it, and what did he mean to Jim Crockett Promotions?
He meant everything. I mean, Ric, when he came to us, he was Ramblin' Rickus Rhodes, came in from Minneapolis. We looked at him, and when he first came in, he was Ric Flair. Or I should say Ric Flair. And then he started to morph into this person, Ric Flair. And as he morphed, he started changing, became very outgoing, flamboyant. And he is that way to this day.
You two were in a plane crash together.
That is
correct. In 1975 with Johnny Valentine, Tim Woods, Bob Bruggers. Do you feel that he's someone that you would automatically just have a bond with, even if you weren't friends, because of that?
Yes, but we were – that spurred it along. My wife told me that I raised Kane in the hospital until they put Ric and I in the same room. I had a horrible brain concussion. It lasted, I guess, a good 6 months or more. During that time, I think Ric went back to wrestle. Yes, we've become close, very close. You know, when he was in the hospital in intensive care, we didn't think he was going to live. I got a call and we went down there and I looked, and yes, I did not think he was going to come through, but he did. And see, that's him. You know, when you think he's down and out, he always comes back. And this match is the same way. Ric Flair has to do this. I mean, it's just his personality.
And it's his terms. It's so incredible to see what he was even able to accomplish. You know, most of the bulk of the career that everybody knows was after 1975. And then, obviously the health issues, the health challenges that he had several years ago, I don't think anybody thought, you know, he was going to kick out on two with that either. And he obviously has, to the point of where he's, you know, you see these training videos with Lethal, and it's just like, has he missed a day? You know?
Yeah, I was down there, and that's true. He goes every day, sometimes twice a day, to these workouts. Now, Ric is not a quote bodybuilder as far as lifting weights, and that he is cardio, continual cardio, and to stretch those muscles. That's why he's lasted so long. There are a lot of wrestlers that, you know, the golden boys that are very muscular and tight, well, those muscles tear very easily. So, and but Rick, throughout his career, has been very conscious of his workouts. I've seen him wear out a Stairmaster machine. The Hindu squats that he does, it's just, he's inhuman when he starts that.
Now, with this event coming up for Ric Flair's last match, how involved are you directly with this event? I know it's being promoted under the Jim Crockett Promotions banner. And as this is coming together, what's kind of been your involvement so far?
Well, interviewing a lot of the wrestlers for Ric Flair's roast, also the wrestlers that are going to be on the card besides Ric Flair, and just talking to the people individually as a group, just my experience over the years, promotion, things that have worked, things that have not worked, and I just ask questions. You know, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that?
I've seen you've been getting involved in with some things down in your neck of the woods with AEW, doing some commentary, did some stuff on AEW Dark for them, and also a bit with the NWA, with them bringing back the Crockett Cup. How do you enjoy modern wrestling, and what parts of the modern game do you enjoy?
The youth that is in wrestling, definitely. You look at Brock Anderson. You know, a young man, he's carrying on the family tradition. Ashley Flair, you look at her, you know, they're more today high flyers, more like Lucha Libre or AAA as far as their moves. They're constantly moving. Whereas, you know, way back when in 75, in the 70s, let's say middle 70s, we had some very big, strong, athletic wrestlers that made us, you know, the golden years, as we called it. Today, the wrestlers are very smart. They're all business people. You know, they know that the career is only going to be for X period of time. So they are looking to invest their money, diversify, which, you know, a long time ago, we didn't have that.
I think at the end of the day, whether the style is fast-paced or, you know, hybrid kind of with Japanese and Mexican mix right in there, it's all about getting a reaction from the audience, and that part of it's certainly never changed.
Right. You know, it's like anything. It's the psychology. You know, of wrestling today, it's more a set that they're told a scene and how to do it. Whereas, you know, before it was, all right, we sort of knew the end, but we had no idea what was going to happen in between that. It was all ad lib, and which was great, you know, and some of the younger wrestlers today are doing that. They have very good coaches, so I'm anxious to see a lot of them come to the front.
Was it fun for you to get behind the mic a little bit again in AEW? I know you're going to be doing that for the upcoming show also.
It was fun to be with Tony Schiavone. That was the main reason. Yeah, Tony and I, golly, you know, it's all like ham and eggs. And, you know, I look forward to the July 31st, and being with Tony. This might be, you know, you have Ric Flair's match. This might be our last one. You don't know. But I am so excited to be there with him.
You two were a pair that I watched as a child, and you just brought so much natural joy and intensity to everything you were doing. And I appreciate what you were doing so much more now than I did maybe when I was a little kid, you know, watching the Superstation on Long Island in the 1980s. What were you mostly trying to accomplish on commentary?
I'm a fan. Okay, first and foremost, I am a fan. And I would call the match like a fan. What would they say? What would they do? I mean, I'm not above screaming, yelling. I come unglued, that it became fun. I had no idea what was going to happen in the match. Really, I said, don't tell me. I don't want to know. I hope I was I'm not a great announcer. No, I wanted fans to feel like they were ringside, that they were almost in the ring with those wrestlers. One of the things that I did behind the camera was the audio person in the truck. I said, I want you to play that audio like someone is right next to that wrestler. They can close their eyes and see what's going on. That's what needs to happen.
I feel like the only person I can think of maybe in wrestling who maybe came close to your intensity during his career was probably Don West. I feel like Don really had that in terms of that natural reaction, that right. excitement about the product and just really – It is great to show the fans that somebody actually just, you're not going to a library, you're going to a pro wrestling show. So you want some actual, excitement in there.
Well, you go to a theater to watch a movie, and what do they use to really get you? It's music. It's the sound. If you get scared watching a horror movie, you cut the sound off. So, sound has so much to do with it. And, I hope, I know it'll happen, is that, for those people that cannot come to Nashville, which it'll be a shame because you're going to have so much fun. Nashville's a fantastic city. But, with Fight TV carrying the broadcast worldwide, everybody's going to be able to see it. And there's so much more to see besides Rick's match.
As you mentioned a little bit about production and sound and stuff like that, as someone deeply involved behind the scenes in the production of TV production of wrestling, how important is good TV production to good wrestling programming?
Golly, it's mandatory. Good production. If you don't have it, the people won't see it. The cameraman will be three steps behind. Audio will be even worse. Tape replay. Everybody has to be in sync. You have to be a well-oiled machine and team. Yes, it's imperative that production works well. Now, saying that, this event, it's going to be sort of old school wrestling in production-wise. There is no way I'm going to try to glitz and glamour anyone out there. The participants are what you're going to see. You're not going to see a lot of bells and whistles with that. You're going to see the wrestlers and who they are and what they can do.
WrestleMania is the biggest spectacle I can think of in wrestling currently, but even WrestleMania right. had a predecessor, which was Starrcade, which started in 1983, put on by Jim Crockett right. Promotions. What was it like building up to that? What was it like being a part of that? And what did that event mean to you and your family?
Well, it was every Thanksgiving, and it morphed because it just started out as what we call a house show. Every Thanksgiving, the Greensboro Coliseum, we would have a wrestling match, and we would sell tickets, and usually always sold out, and. With Dusty Rhodes and my brother, Jim Jr., started talking, this closed circuit started coming in and pay-per-view. So why don't we give it a try? So we did. We had our own production truck. So that made things even better. Simple lighting gear, simple sound system, but miking the cameras and around the ring, making people feel that they are there in person. They're sitting ringside. So yes, it was Greensboro. It will always have a special place. You know, we used to sell tickets at halftime, let's say intermission, for the next Thanksgiving show, and you'd almost sell half the tickets. So that's people expect and know they're going to have a great show. And I'm going to plug Nashville. Nashville is going to be the same way. You know, it's, you will not be disappointed. Jim Crockett Promotions, Flair's last match. It's going to be something you're going to remember.
People speak in such a reverent way about Jim Crockett Promotions and Mid-Atlantic Wrestling and what it meant to them, even to this day. You just talk to anybody who was kind of watching back then, and people always refer back to, especially some of the old interviews. And just what kind of things do you hear from fans? Because I'm sure you hear memories from them all the time about stuff that that means something to them.
Well, letters in the past that, you know, I just want to let you know that my grandmother or grandfather died watching wrestling, and they died happy. They talk about some of the matches, cage matches, bull rope matches, and how violent, but also how entertaining they were. And, you know, people would love to hate the wrestlers, but they would also be the very first ones in line outside the auditorium or Coliseum for an autograph. I don't know how to explain it. We have a culture, and it still lasts today. The people, it's multi-generational. You have the great grandparents, the grandparents, the parents, and the children. Now, they all are watching it, well, mainly because of streaming. You know, yep. With the internet today, there's not a match that you really can't find. And that is why I think you see the resurgence of, you know, the Dusty Rhodes, the Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, Ric Flair, the Road Warriors, all those wrestlers were so unique, and their interviews, you know, Roddy Piper, they were priceless. You know, they weren't scripted. Mm-hmm. They just started talking. And for me, I felt like a human mic stand, because I'd hold that mic, and I just was amazed, you know, watching, you know, wrestlers who, you know, they just pick up on one another and banter back and forth. You know, I wish everybody could do that. You know, and a lot of people are jealous of that. You know, that everyone had the gift of gab. Everyone worked as a team. Even if you're a good guy or a bad guy, you know, things were clicking.
I remember years ago when the shows started streaming again. World Championship Wrestling was on WWE Network, and then I guess now Peacock. Right. I interviewed Cody Rhodes sometime around that time, and we were just kind of chatting about what old wrestling we were watching at that time. And I said to him, you know, I recently just rediscovered Ivan Koloff. And as a kid, again, I didn't understand that he was so great. And just watching some of his old stuff back, I'm like, you know, he was outstanding, wasn't he? And Cody was oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Russian Bear, and he, you know, to meet him and know him outside the ring, he was such a teddy bear. I mean, really. But, I mean, you look at Nikita. Nikita, he changed his name legally to Nikita Koloff. You know, and, I mean, when he first came in, he was scary. I mean, oh, yeah. Truly scary. You didn't know what was going to happen in the ring. You know. Because he didn't,
or in the interview segments, as I recall, I recall David Crockett taking the Russian sickle.
Yeah, that was like running through the backyard in the summertime and catching a clothesline. that's what it felt like.
Man.
Yeah.
What was the, we have competition now back in wrestling again, which I think is great and it's fun and it's probably better for the wrestlers and the promotions too.
You have to have competition. Have to. If you don't, then you get lazy. Yeah. And you know, you shouldn't do that.
What was the relationship between your dad and the other promoters and then with your brother and the other promoters and or even yourself? Like, you know, what was it like in those days with them trying to, you know, exchange talent and work with each other, but then kind of maybe being a little competitive with each other sometimes?
Yeah, you had territories way back when. And that was, you know, as far as my father, he was very good friends with all the wrestlers and all the promoters. With the promoters, Vince McMahon Sr. and my father were very good friends. Bill Watts, Eddie Graham. Eddie Graham, my father got him a job with Cowboy Luttrell in Florida. So, you know, it's Mike LaBelle out in California, Don Owens up in Oregon and Washington State. You know, some of them are... there again, you have to remember the time. Communication and networking was not that easy. You didn't have cell phones. You know, it was black and white TV when it first started. So, you know, the meetings, the Wrestling Alliance meetings each year, that was really the only time they truly got together. Otherwise, they talked on the telephone.
And it's so interesting to hear you mention all those names and so much interconnectivity with all of that, too. When you think about, you know, who kind of came off the Eddie Graham tree? Well, that was Dusty Rhodes and that was Kevin Sullivan and so many other people that influenced other people that, you know, you show up at a wrestling show now and you're still going to find some connection that with somebody that came from somebody else. Jim
right.
Ross coming from Bill Watts, you know.
Right. Sting came from Bill Watts, also Ultimate Warrior.
Yep.
You know, when he came from Bill Watts. You know, Arn Anderson actually came from there. You know, Rick was traveling and he said, "This guy is an Anderson." He sent his tape in, and you're right. He looked exactly like an Anderson. Still does today.
So when they're saying they look like an Anderson, are they looking like Ole or are they looking like Gene?
A combination. You know, I think Arn, he's a combination of both.
Yeah. Because now I remember with FTR, when they were breaking in, everybody's like, "Oh, they look like Andersons." I'm like, well, you're just saying that they both kind of look like Arn, really. he's kind of inherited the look like an Anderson thing now.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Arn is really, since he's got a new career, you might say, he's really stepped in front of it and really has taken off. He really has. He's always had the gift of gab.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's expanded it. I mean, oh, yeah, with his podcast and his interviews. Yeah. You know, when you used to watch the four horsemen together, they would just click. You know, one would say something, the other would catch it, and they'd run with it for a while. Then another one, you know, it just go back. Matter of fact, you know, they're going to be in Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
How different was it for you being in your family promotion and then being in the kind of the corporate environment of WCW? And what kind of had to adjust for you?
Well, it was, I guess some people, I hope they don't take it wrong, but usually in a corporate environment, you go into a meeting figuring out who you're going to blame for whatever. And that doesn't work. You know, it when it was Jim Crockett Promotions, we were all in it together. You know, when my father was alive, it was a true dictatorship. You know, that he was the boss. And if he said, "Jump high," you say, "How high?" And, you know, it's, and then when Jimmy became the president of the company, it just, you just sort of did the same thing. I learned, early on, if I wanted something, I ended up making it his idea or somebody's idea, just so long to get it done. In the corporate world, I did the same thing, and you didn't have, in the corporate world, everybody was trying to, they had an agenda and they wanted to move to another position, I guess you might say. You had some teamwork, but not as much as I'd like to have seen. You look at it, Ted Turner was the only one in his company that wanted us. Nobody else did. Until Bill Shaw, head of HR, volunteered to take us over. And WCW just started running full speed then. You have to credit him for making WCW number one.
Certainly. I have to ask you, just because I don't know much about this time period, but what was David Finley like as a pro wrestler? And what's your favorite memory from that time period when you were in the ring?
I got the hell beat out of me. It was Pierre's father gave me a crappy payoff. Wham! No one in the family knew the business. I was an amateur wrestler, wasn't married. And father talked to me. He said, someone needs to understand their end of it. So I did it. I guess it was about a year and a half. Developed asthma and had to stop. But I learned and I understood when somebody was talking to me about, I don't know if I can do that, or, if they're truly hurt or not. I can look and if they fall the wrong way, I know they're hurt. Mm-hmm.
I just had never, the whole time I knew you as David Crockett, the announcer from TV, I did not know that you wrestled until a few years ago. So then when I started diving down that rabbit hole, I find you and
it was a rabbit hole.
You and Jim Dillon as a tag team. And I'm like, that David Crockett and JJ Dillon as tag team partners. Who knew?
I was one of the four ponies, not the four horsemen.
All right. We're going to move on to something right now we call the three count. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. Oh. So what is a stand-up interview you could do which you knew would crack you up, and a stand-up interview that was just completely unpredictable to you? What which wrestlers?
Roddy Piper and Abdullah the Butcher.
What made the – so Piper would crack you up and Abdullah was the unpredictable one?
Oh, Abdullah, you never knew what was going to come out of his mouth. Roddy Piper, always. Would just his sayings that all the interviews were fantastic. But don't get me wrong. Roddy brought in his knowledge base. I would drive and watch him take, he'd have a book and he's writing the whole time. He'd hear things on the radio. He'd read things. This sounds good. That sounds good. And he really, he got his doctorate, you might say, in wrestling interviews. He did.
Yeah. I'll add too, he's probably one of the nicest people I've ever seen to fans whenever I saw him at various shows in the Northeast over the years. Mm-hmm. The two wrestlers in Jim Crockett Promotions often struck me as totally off the wall, and I smile when I see them to this day in footage. They still don't really make any sense to me. And it's the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, and it's Bugsy McGraw. What is your best description of those two characters? Because I've tried for a long time.
Boogie Woogie Man and Bugsy McGraw. Wow. Golly. they've been drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, they're out there in left field. You're never sure what's going to, you know, go on with them. To this day, you watch Boogie Woogie, man. I've seen him in some matches locally, and he still has the same wrestling tights. They don't quite fit now. They're a little big on him. Bugsy, yeah, he was certifiable, but a nice guy outside of the ring. Yeah, both of them are. Yeah, but
I believe he became a nurse also, Bugsy.
Ooh, that's scary.
I think that's what that was his career path after.
I know, but that is scary, you know. Think about it.
Luckily, it's not really Bugsy McGraw. It's the guy that's basically portraying Bugsy McGraw. But I have a friend of mine that sends me, you know, Mid-Atlantic clips and all sorts of stuff like that all the time. And it's almost universally, it's almost always Jimmy Valiant or Bugsy McGraw clips that he sends me. He's like, can you explain this to me? I'm like, no, I can't, but I'll enjoy watching it.
Yeah. So, well, see, that's the good thing. You know, you have these characters you look at and go, huh? But they draw you in. Yeah, look at Boogie Woogie Man and Bugsy. You know, they have lasted all this time, and it you like their matches, you like their interviews, their strut. Yeah, you have to pick your own footprints, and they definitely have.
Yep. And then finally, what is the craziest thing you've ever personally seen on a pro wrestling show?
The craziest thing I've ever seen. Oh, on a show. Okay.
Yep.
I've seen some others that weren't on a show, but the wrestlers were done. On a show, they're all crazy. But I know that we almost got kicked off TBS because of Abdullah the Butcher bringing out this piece of raw liver and started to eat it, and the blood, you know, and of course he's bleeding too, you know. So I mean, and Ted Secretary called and said never again. So
and then you'd have to let him know, well, it's Abdullah, he's gonna just decide to do what he's gonna want to do.
Yeah, he's gonna do it again. Yeah, you just hope it's not on television.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining me today on Under the Ring. I really enjoyed talking to you and getting to hear your stories and your perspective. And you know, best of luck with this Ric Flair's last match. And I'm sure you and Tony Schiavone are going to be great.
Oh, thank you very much. And I hope you're going to tune in, or I hope you can be there, really, because it is going to be fun. 3 days. Think about it. The Ric Flair roast. There's so many people that are going to come and really roast him. And then you've got StarCast with all the wrestlers meet and greet there. And then that Ric Flair last match, the 31st. It's going to be one exciting weekend. I want to thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. Thanks again, everyone, for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank David Crockett for joining me on the show today. I'd also like to thank Derek Kukulich of Q Communications for helping set this up. Join me next week, where our guest will be from AEW and the Blackpool Combat Club, the Ring of Honor Pure Champion, Wheeler Yuta. Have a great week, everyone.